Good morning, Anthony.
Hello, Nick. Hello.
Oh, gotta connect. One sec. There we are. Can you hear me?
Yep, I could hear you in the first place.
Well, that's great news. Great news.
We're getting stuck straight
Get stuck straight in.
in. I'll go first this week. If you had to go back to coaching fitness clients again, what would be your demographic or niche and why?
Missed the question.
Didn't. Didn't. It's the first one.
Dave's.
No. One sec. Sam's is first. Ah, that's weird. It wasn't there a minute ago. I've just refreshed it. Do you know of any all-in-one platforms for calendars, landing pages, email lists, etc.? Or do these tend to be a big CRM type platform aimed at larger companies?
Not that does absolutely everything, no, not off the top of my head. No, nothing off the top of my head, which does everything in one. Do you know of any?
No.
No, I don't think so. I think it's about getting I think it's looking at that stuff and looking at the biggest things that you either lose track of or need, like in one, like a CRM is typically quite a good thing to obviously have. It's probably one of the bigger things I would say that people kind of miss out on, would you?
Yeah.
So in regards to like a CRM system specifically, you've got, let me just have a quick look. Sorry for the delay on this.
Not very well prepared here, are you?
Well, I knew the question 10 seconds ago, Anthony. I'll get back to you, Dave. I'll pull some out, but there's no, not one thing does everything unless you do something custom. A lot of like we use Mondays for like client management, and a little bit about project management. It can do a huge amount of things. So it's something like Mondays, I would guess, is probably going to be close to everything, but not going to fulfill everything you need. But I think the biggest gap for a lot of people is going to be probably more of a CRM style system. So yeah, but I'll get back to you on that. Sorry, I have lost the questions now. Okay. Oh, this is challenging, isn't it? Because they're not coming up now.
You know, it started very well today, have you?
They're just not coming up. Read your own question while I sort this out.
What are the main factors to consider before switching target market? I'm going to rattle through a few things that doesn't really matter if they're in order or anything like that, but I think the first one would be, are you questioning changing through a lack of success of the market that you've currently got? And if that's the case, has the work is the work that you're putting in matching your expectations? Because usually we want to change if we're not seeing success quick enough. It's like a natural human thing, isn't it? But so I would question yourself on that. I would have a think and question yourself on changing your market if the current one isn't really lighting a fire in your belly to go out there and help them people. So any product in any industry should have some, in my opinion, a bit of a passion for helping the set type of demographic with the specific problems that they have. And if that's not there, then I'd consider maybe looking into a different demographic that potentially would have that fire in the belly and all of that. I think what you also need to consider is where your business is located and how it operates and all of that. That a lot of the time does start to organically just narrow down the market that you have anyway. So, for example, if you predominantly, and I know this person who asked this question is predominantly doing like home training and bases themselves out of a specific small gym in a local area, that you could say lends it to and starts to dial down the demographics that you potentially could tap into. So all of them would be my considerations, but the underlying one is that you've got to have this. When you're doing the marketing for your business and the sales for your business, and especially for most coaches who don't like to do social media marketing, email marketing, lead generation, and all of that, there has got to be some fire and internal motivation in helping a specific demographic for a reason, in my opinion. And if that's the case and that's not there, then I would question it and then potentially look at working on something else. Anything you would add to that?
Nope.
Nothing at all. I'm surprised at that. Next question. If you had to go back to coaching fitness clients again, what would be your demographic or niche and why?
Good question. I think it would be very much similar to me, in all honesty. I think, yeah, it would be. I think it's knowing and more so kind of taking that from speaking and obviously speaking to knowing my friends, and people similar in a similar situation, similar age, maybe not the similar kind of experience level as me. But same kind of, I guess, limitations, structure in their week. So yeah, I think that's who I dial into. Yeah. Why? Because I think that, like, speaking to a lot of my friends, a lot of the things that they held on to, like playing football. Not a lot of my friends actually have been that much into the gym, but a lot of them been to a lot of football, a lot of sports before, and that's kind of tapered off. And I think every time we meet up, there's like a conversation about, you know, what they want to do, or joining a gym, or doing this, or I've got to do that, or I've got to do this. So yeah, I think I would dial into that because it's close to me. I can relate to it. So yeah, that's what would yours be?
I'm torn between two, if I'm dead honest. One would be that kind of corporate well-being sector, blatantly, because for me, still a lot of coaches don't tap into it, so therefore that would be a lot of kind of well-being kind of coaching, but also like specific coaching for people who I suppose have similar roles to us, who are rooted to the desk quite a lot, busy, probably similar to us, like you just said, but more so in the kind of corporate side of it, blatantly because I just think there's a massive untouched market there that a lot of coaches aren't tapping into. And I probably more so opened my eyes to that when we sat down with that Ollie Patrick and we talked to him about it, and it kind of lit a fire in my belly to be like, fuck, that is actually a big, big problem. And I'd like to tap into helping with that. So there's that, and there's always this kind of the other side, the other one that I'd be torn to is that like performance-led adolescence. So like any, I suppose anyone from say the age of 8 to 21, that kind of adolescent stage of performance, but into sport at a, either an academy level or at a very performance-driven level, more so probably the older age group, in terms of coaching that market in regards to like that's the reason I got into the industry in the first place. And it's something that I've got a little bit to do with now, but not all in with. And I think it's something that I feel is a bit of unfinished business that I'd like to tap into at some point. It's a completely different kind of style of market to what I've mentioned before, but it's definitely something that I feel like I've just said, it's a bit of unfinished business that I always wanted to do that I've not done yet. So I feel like I could do something there, like a center or a gym, or just very much focused on a kids in sport, so sports performance, and also just kids participation in exercise. I've always had that kind of underlying thing that I've not done it yet, and I need to get it done because I've always said I've wanted to do it. So yeah, them two. You're on the next one,
What
aren't you?
percentage of your time should be spent thinking about the bigger picture over, for example, the day-to-day in-person business work?
I'm going to give you a really general answer, if I'm dead honest. So probably when you review your business every month, I would look at the bigger picture of Ivy. Like how you review your goals, your plan, you adapt your goals and plan potentially to the performance of your business. So, general answer, I would say monthly, but it very much depends on you as a person. But the bigger picture for me, you tap into it every time you do the monthly review with us. You then lean back to your goals, your plan. Maybe do you need to adapt it, tweak it, reforecast, replan, all of that type of stuff. You tap into the bigger picture then. But other than that, you're more or less in the day-to-day, the week-to-week stuff. Anything you'd add?
No.
Okay. Recommendations for how to handle a client who moan a lot when you try to increase their weight. What now?
Answered that one. That was on like 2 weeks ago.
It's on it again. I feel like I'm pretty on top of my week-to-week organization. I prioritize my tasks, plan things out, and book time into my schedule to get things done. However, I struggle to find time for the less frequent monthly tasks. I always end up doing them on my days off. Any advice, or is it just a case of planning them into my week better? Slash, that's how it's gonna be done. Gonna be.
Yes, a little bit of both, really. I think looking at your week and where you can put in like different recurring, changing monthly blocks of work. So if you go, right, let's say the first week of March might be planning out April's marketing plan, right? So you've got maybe 2 hours in your week for that. The week after that might be reviewing clients' adherence and success and making adjustments or booking in calls where needed. The week after that might be implementing and creating anything you need to do in regards to the marketing plan. Week four then might be the monthly review. So have basically a weekly time for monthly tasks and then booking them in instead of obviously weekly, it'd be monthly recurring tasks. So effectively, you're taking the thinking work out of, right, what do we do on this week or where to kind of put that in and react to it. So yeah, basically the same format as you do weekly, but putting it in monthly and just making sure that you're cycling through the right stuff on a month-to-month basis on the right weeks. Anything you'd add, Anthony? Didn't bloody think so. Running a one-off session, such as squat workshop, upsell to clients, or give it as a freebie slash perk of the service.
Freebie perk of the service. Yeah, I would a freebie perk of the service. And like if I'd seen obscene demand for that, for example, squat session, squat workshop, then maybe. But I think if it was just something that I'd started to do, because my clients have been, I need some support with it, then I would just do it as a, personally, I would do it as a perk of the service. You could run it as a lead generator as well, but yeah, in terms of from a client perspective, I would run any type of workshops for clients as a freebie. Anything you'd add?
No, I'd agree. I would agree. I would couple it up with maybe like a bit of a testing session as well. I think it's exciting. It's also pretty cool for then for you to lead on to other workshops and other kind of group style of sessions. And I know this person's considering small group PT, so it might start to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. So no, apart from that, no. Good shout.
How many emails to send per day for a launch?
No magic number. We had Suck on last week, didn't we? And he was using his kind of launch as an example, and he was saying five, was it? I think five. Listen, there's no kind of magic number to that, but I think it's making sure you get those, you're kind of narrowing down those people. So if you've got 1,000 people on your mailing list, right, and this launch is for 10% of them, you obviously want to make sure that 10% sees the email. So consistency, frequency, on that day is really going to help. So use that as a benchmark. Good question is, on average, how long does it take for a business to start making a stable income?
I suppose it depends. It's very subjective, isn't it? It depends what you mean by stable. So, but I think I remember going on a course. God, this was a while ago. I actually think it was a webinar during COVID, like a business-based one that was just dotting about. And there was some like a census report on the average self-employed business that, oh, God, that they registered as a sole trader. Took 2 to 3 years to become profitable. So, like that thing sticks out in my head. And I actually think that that should put a lot of coaches in and your expectations and of success into perspective because a lot of coaches can become profitable after 6 months, can't they? Do you know what I mean? It can be a really quick job to turn around and you can hit break even within 3 months and become profitable when you in that in double that their months. So, yeah, it's really a depends answer, and it's shit answering it like that. But it very much depends on you. But like looking at that, that always sticks out in my head. I remember sitting and watching the webinar and thinking, wow, like I remember my expectations as a coach and feel like I wasn't doing too well. And I also see a lot of coaches stop now because, and then go back to full-time employment because it's not meeting their expectations quick enough. And I'm like, wow, it takes the average business to become profitable takes it 2 to 3 years. Like we can do that rapid. So Yeah, I'd use that as a guide. It's something that helped me put things in perspective. When I sat there watching it, and hopefully it does you as well. But yeah, it is very subjective, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's hard to turn around and go, well, when is the average time? I think if I can go off experience, like a lot of PTs and a lot of coaches drop out the industry after 7 months. So you could say it probably takes about a year around that point to earn a stable income within PT if you're doing the right things. But that would be a general opinion. But at least you've got a bit of a fact to go off as well with that kind of thing that I watched. Anything you'd add to that, Nick?
I'd agree to that time frame. I think, can you be profitable really quick in a commercial gym? 100%, like absolutely. We're not talking like half the time there. You're talking a couple of months. If, and the big if is, you put the work in, you'd be resilient against, we mentioned this on the call on Friday, didn't we? People are searching out for yeses way too often and get disappointed when they don't get a yes with a position in a business. And in my opinion, you should be chasing those no's more, because the more no's you get, the more yeses you're going to get. And I think that's a really important thing to kind of factor in. The reason why most, and I think we're quite unique, the fitness industry, and especially, typically the normal route of coming out your level three into a commercial gym and working out of a commercial gym, is the advantage you've got over a huge proportion of other startup businesses is that you don't have to go looking for your market, because they're literally walking past you every day in a captive environment. That's the massive advantage you have if you're a if you're going through that kind of normal route. So in my opinion, I agree with Ant what he said there about stable is a different category to profit, isn't it? Because you can have spikes very quickly, seasonally, circumstances of the gym, is it new, just open, no PTs, all that kind of stuff. So I would agree with Ant in regards to stable. I would say way quicker if you chase being uncomfortable, you chase no's, and yeah, you do the work.
Have you changed your opinion on that chasing notes? Because I remember you used to joke about that was the advice you got on a course once, and it was shite.
Well, I haven't changed my opinion on it, but I think I mentioned it the other day, because it reframes it a little bit, doesn't it? You know what I mean? Like, if you look at the biggest fear that most PTs have is about getting rejected, and that's why they don't go out there and offer things. Do you know what I mean? It's that single no or single yes that they're chasing constantly. Like, you'll always hear, oh, I'm not sure if that person would take it, or they always have this assumption or perception of someone, even if they inquire. And I think sometimes that expectation they place on themselves leads to disappointment, because you're going to get far more no's than you are yeses, especially when you're developing those communication skills, gaining confidence in your product and your service and your price point. You're not going to be delivering as well in the first year than you are in year two and year three and year four, right? Just based on pure experience. So I think I framed it the other day in regards to, well, every single no, you're going to be able to take that as a learning curve in regards to, did I ask too quickly? Did I feel pressured on asking? Could I have offered something in the meantime? All that kind of stuff. And I think, yeah, I think it reframes it a little bit. I think really that the reason why previously I was kind of put off by it is because just the context it was put in regards to, it's literally a numbers game. So go out and just, offer your service point blank, close questions. You want PT or not? Yes or no? Do you know what I mean?
That's why I asked you to put context on it.
Well done, Anthony.
So I don't want you sounding like a bell end any more than
Shut
you
up, you
already are,
shut
Nick.
the fuck up, man. Whose question is it? I remember.
You've had a nightmare today.
How far in advance do you plan your social posts, emails?
I would say 2 weeks. I'd say 2 weeks, but we kind of try to keep to a theme of whatever we're pushing. So an example of that would be we are doing a client results slash retention slash adherence slash we haven't named it yet. lead magnet at the start of March. So you will see in the theme of content the next 2 weeks will be geared towards, I don't know, the pain points you have as coaches regards to not getting results for clients, or the barriers you have with it, all of that type of stuff. So normally we're 2 weeks in advance, and that is towards a theme of whatever we're pushing. We've been quite lead magnet heavy actually recently. So yeah, that would be the response. Emails were probably even were pretty fucking good with them emails, aren't we? We can be 3, 4 weeks ahead sometimes, can't
Yeah, but it's less frequency, isn't
we? Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, but I'm not saying, by the way, we're always 2 weeks ahead. There is times where I can pretty much guarantee in March we will not be 2 weeks ahead because we're
it? Yeah.
fucking stacked with work and events and stuff like that. So like anyone, yes, we have a process to it, but there's sometimes a little bit of flex in that process. And that's one of the things that is a little bit more flex in because it's a big chunk of the week. You kind of go, actually, instead of 5 hours of content, we'll do three. And then naturally, then you find yourself only doing having a week's worth of content ahead. So yeah, we very rarely let that happen, but it happens. So if you do it, don't worry about it. Why is my child screaming in my face when I complete this? Does he not know it's important?
Be fair, I'd scream in your face when you were doing that if I was no.
They probably feel like screaming whilst doing it, to be fair. What are the common mistakes from coaches who struggle to generate organic leads, and how can they overcome these struggles? Good question. Why are you reading it again?
Just want to make sure that I answer it right. Is that okay? You're on one of your Monday moods, aren't you?
I'm not trained.
Fuck's sake.
I'm gonna go out for a run on my dinner. On my dinner.
You lunch me.
Yeah.
I think the very first one is not niching down. First one. That is a very common mistake, is not niching down, not know who you're talking to, creating information on social media and not making it relatable and relevant and to the person you're talking to. So the very first thing is niching down 1,000,000%. I think the second one is accepting that you're going to go through a quiet time and a kind of silent period of not getting feedback. And when I say feedback, that's like using like the interaction tools that social media gives you putting out there to engage people, comments, polls, question box, all that kind of stuff, and not being consistent with that and not doubling down, because that you will find these people, they will find you if you're using the right language, if you're talking to the person and being specific about it. Not giving people an option, not following up with people as well. So when they've reached out and they have raised their hand and said, yeah, that's me, I'm struggling with that, I want that, is not reaching out to them, not being genuine, not being authentic. I think that's the third one. So again, how can you fix that is do those things. And I also think that not being clear enough and trying to speak in your language, I think, is another common thing that I think happens quite a lot. instead of speaking in your client's language. And what I mean by that is when you're positioning, like what you do, who you are, why you do it. And just saying that has actually led me to my last one, which is not talking enough about why you're doing things for this demographic, for this person, why you want to help them. And people talk way too much about what they do and what their thing is. Any more you would add?
No.
It's fucking great question. That wasn't it.
No, 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 no.
Whoa. Not you.
What?
Checklists to determine if I need to change anything with my clients' programming. They are happy, they are progressing, they are learning new skills, they get opportunity to input into the program. I always take a beat and schedule time. I always schedule time in to plan the next block, but more often than not, I come to the conclusion that it isn't broken. And I'll introduce new exercises, switch up the conditioning core just to keep it fresh, but otherwise, it is broadly the same. Am I just being a lazy ass or efficient and effective? Question mark.
I think if you have the data to say that your clients are happy and your clients are progressing and feedback that they are learning, then no, you're not being lazy. You are doing the right things. Largely, you would have heard this that probably 80% of the movements they do are going to be the same from week to week. And obviously, what differs is going to be minute over time, maybe a little bit of accessory or conditioning work and stuff like that. I don't think you're being lazy, no. Listen, there's lots of playing about you can do with programming. And because of that choice, sometimes this is what most PTs probably second guess themselves about and question. Yeah, you question yourselves a lot. Like we hear it a lot or see it a lot. A lot of coaches question themselves on their programming. But if you found something, if you found a method and a model of your programming where your clients are happy, you have the feedback, you have the data that they're progressing, you're getting good feedback in terms of their learning, so you're surveying them and all of that type of stuff, there is no point questioning your programming at all. Would I, as a preference, like to vary certain parts of the programming up? Like you put here, like the conditioning elements and the core elements and all of that. Yeah, I would personally. But I'll come back to the main point you've said, and I would accept that as being good enough for your clients, and that's all that matters. Anything you would add?
It's really like that. Two things that come into my head. One, how do we know they're progressing? How are you measuring that? These are the questions I would ask myself. Two, if you were to ask your clients what their aim is, what the, let's call it, science behind the programming, not the science, but the method behind the programming, do you think they'd be able to tell you? I think
Is
those are the.
that important to clients?
Well, yes, it is in regards to why am I in the gym doing these things? I think it is, yeah.
No, I think it'll be important to specific people, but I blanket in all clients with that. I disagree. I don't think they'll be that asked.
I do. No, I don't think they'll be asked like coming in. I don't think that's a priority for them coming in to understand the programming. But if it helps with looking ahead to what their aim is of doing these back squats, doing this way of training, and what that leads them to, I think that's important.
Yeah, for some it will be, but I think from the way that you've communicated the question or they've communicated the question, they're happy, they're progressing, they're learning new skills. they get the opportunity to input to the program. I think that's far beyond what
Yeah, and
most
I'm not
people.
saying that's wrong. I'm saying those are the questions I would ask.
Yeah, and with the data, like I said before, you want tangible feedback of them being happy, them seeing progression, you seeing progression as a coach, you getting feedback that they're learning. So you've got some tangible feedback on that. If you've got that, 1,000,000% crack on doing what you're doing. If you haven't got that, work on getting it, because otherwise you'll always second guess yourself with your program. Like if you look at it in general, if I look at a program I've done or a program I've bought, you look at the main structure of that program, it's more or less the same year round, dependent on the type of program it is, whether it's generalized or specific. But the bare bones of most people's programs, it's the same. I'm not saying that year round everyone's doing the same lower body bias front squat, but that's probably rotated 4 or 5 different times with, I don't know, a reverse lunge, a split squat, a back squat, a Zercher, an Anderson squat, or whatever. That's just rotated. But if you've got broadly a decent fix, 70 to 80%, it's the same, and you're rotating slight changes in the movement patterns or the exercises with general population, I don't think you're far off. And I know you agree on that, but if you've got the data, then that gives you the understanding that you bang on. If you haven't, get it. Because otherwise, you'll always come back to this.
No,
You want to carry on fucking debating that or what?
we'll
Sure.
be saying the same thing.
Not really.
You're just argumentative today.
No, I just disagreed with that one point that you made. 3 to 5 things to consider or do if getting online clients is the main goal.
I'll go back to very similar question answers that I've said to the other question previously. And ask yourself this question: who is my service? What am I an authority in? What area am I an authority in? What am I an expert in solving this specific problem? Who has this specific problem? These are the things that I would be considering and asking myself. Like, again, you've got to be specific, in my opinion, on social media to stand out. I think, are you going absolutely all in on what you're positioning as a solution to that problem? Are you communicating it multiple times and ways, through the different ways you can communicate through social media? Are you being direct with what people can do, how they can do it? Are you engaging those people specifically through the tools that social media gives you? Are you showing your personality? Like, all of these things are factors and ingredients to getting people to buy off you, essentially. So those are the things I would consider genuinely, for getting online clients. Anything you'd add?
Do the do.
At what point, if ever, does it become the client's fault for not reaching the goals they wanted? Just had a client leave who's been with me a while and didn't get what she wanted. I've tried to accommodate and support her in every which way, but she's never been able to action the steps we discussed for outside of the gym, even after making endless adjustments and have her led the change.
I sit here and question and think, what does it matter anyway? Like, I sit here and I think the way to see it is, it's not whose fault, but what did I learn? And if you were to look back on that client and go, how did I understand the person when I took them on? How did I understand what they wanted and needed? How did I understand what was important to them? How did I understand what their life was like and how that flexed over time? How did I make sure that the program fit into that life and flexed with that life over time? Did I ask her the preferred method of communication, the frequency of that, and did we review that often? And did we review goals often? And I just have this checklist with every single client. And if there's some breaks in that checklist, whether it doesn't really matter or not, but then you could go, actually, yeah, there's a learning in there that I could have improved about that and that. Okay. Or yeah, I ticked all of them boxes, but the client didn't apply themselves to that. Okay. Does it, I don't think it really matters. Like the client's left. Can you learn something from it? Yes or no? More than likely, yes. Amazing. Embrace it. Fucking crack on with your next clients. I think getting caught up into it's the client's fault or it's not the client's fault. It's just, in my opinion, no point putting your energy there at all. Like it's going, what can I learn from that process? Because I'm sure there's lots of learnings. And then how can I apply them learnings to the clients I have now and the future clients that I take on? I would say, in a general experienced reflection of working with thousands of PTs, when we reverse engineer taking that client on, these breaks and disconnects in levels of understanding, and the frequency isn't there in regards to reviewing and adapting and resetting the program and the support and the service. And if that's the case, then we need to take more responsibility. Doesn't mean it's your fault. It's just a constant learning process. So, yeah, I wouldn't bother your energy of whose fault it is personally. What do you think?
I'd agree. I think the things I would look at is not the method you use, it's how you communicate it or how you communicated it. So no, I'd agree.
Last one of the day. If you could only write one email a week as a PT, what would it include?
I think on a regular basis, I think it would be almost like a bit of a roundup of the week. So maybe some of the content that you have shared on social media, a story, from a client from that week, highlighting some of the challenges, the lessons, and a signature, a super signature based call to action, which gives people more options to reach out or to, apply to work with you. So high value, relatable information that's lesson driven. Some shares of some social media and call to action.
Sweet. That was a beefy one today, wasn't it?
Not sure.
Chunky one.
I haven't done 45 minutes for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Any final thoughts? There's a very serious one today as well.
You're very serious because you haven't fucking trained, have you? No, I don't think so.
Are we doing a live on Instagram now?
Sorry.
Are we doing a live on Instagram?
Yep.
Come on then, let's go. See you in a bit.
Bye.